We don't quite have the form, but I think we're ready to start the full committee order and start with the Department of Planning. Ms. Ambrose, Commissioner Hanson, nice to see you.
Madam Chair, okay. Thank you for having us. My name for the record is Tom Hanson. I'm the Commissioner of Finance, and you have a copy of our presentation. Do I get brownie points?
you don't get the $10,000 subtracted from your budget for that one.
I was told that came out of my personal account. So I was
a little.
Yeah, I actually do. Madam Chair, we're going to be working off the slides. We've discussed any remaining issues and give you a quick introduction to some of our agency activities, and then obviously answer any questions you might have. You turn to the first chart that's listed as general fund spending. You will see the general fund glimpse of our agency. It is $22.3 million in general fund spending for fiscal year 2009. This represents a 24% reduction since 2000 over the last decade. That's a 24% reduction of the combined agency budgets of finance and DOOR going back to the year 2000. Our base was also cut last year as a result, 2 years ago in 2007, as a result of our merger between the DOOR and finance, with language prohibiting layoffs of any employees as a result of this until the start of the new biennium on July 1st of 2010. This also was no decrease in responsibilities, and through this we still maintain a high level of service and quality to our customers. If you turn and look at the next slide, you'll see quite a difference when we factor in all funds. And the all funds of $727.6 million, not billion. If it was billion, I think it's billion on the region. All be in a much better shape. But you can see the other funds, primarily 96% of the is the State Employees Group Insurance Program, which our department now manages. And when you factor in the CGIP account, we're on the general fund is 3% of our total agency funding. The source of funding for CGIP comes from employee and employer contributions, and they're to be used for the CGIP program expenses. Any use other than for program expenses results in a substantial federal penalty.
Now, so this 96% is that CGIP?
That is CGIP.
Okay, thanks.
A different look on the next slide, just agency staffing. You can see the different categories. One-fifth of our staff is information systems. These are the people responsible for our two main enterprise systems across state government, Semaphore and MAPS. And then when you factor in accounting services and employee insurance are the people that administer the CGIP program. That is 60% of our agency. Most people around the Capitol are more familiar with some of our, two of our smaller yet highly visible groups. One is the Economic Analysis Unit, led by Dr. Tom Stinson, who does our two forecasts. That unit is comprised of Dr. Stinson and three economists, four people. And another highly visible yet small group is our Labor Relations group, which is responsible for labor negotiations and relations for the executive branch, and there are nine people in that unit. Madam Chair, members, on the next chart, I want to give you a look and a glimpse at what has happened with FTEs, the history back to, again, the year 2000. You can see that with the combined agencies, it is a 30% reduction since 2000. We're down 119, specifically 119 FTEs. And the other factor to keep in mind as you go forward, that this year it is the combined DOOR in finance, and when you add MAD, it is our agency's twice the size as it used to be, which is a transition for us as we go forward to operate at that level.
Commissioner Hanson, I'm trying to understand this FTE reduction. So, I guess the combined agencies together seems just to be part of the overall downward trend in FTEs. There's no kind of dramatic drop from when we did that. I read the chart.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, the trend has been down since the year 2000. The result of the merger was the elimination of the commissioner's position, the commissioner's assistant, and I think that was it, and the legislative position. So it was three positions from the merger from the two departments that were specifically defined in the legislation.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, if you're reducing three FTEs from the merger, it seems like it's almost impossible to imagine that this actually resulted in any kind of net savings to the state. Because the angst of going through a merger and moving people around and even just changing letterhead seems to me would cost nearly that much. So is there a way, have you been able to quantify net savings as a result of the merger, or could you do that?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I'm Stephanie Andrews, Deputy Commissioner, for the record. I don't think that when the merger was first proposed, it was proposed as a savings idea, and we've continued to move forward as it, in principle, as a way to make our operation more efficient, make it more productive, have people, groups work together that hadn't worked together before. There were merger savings that were taken as part of the merger bill of, I think, $600,000 for the biennium. That was somewhat challenging to meet, given the fact that we also had this prohibition to not lay off any employees. I think that there have been certainly improvements, even if you look at things like our information systems is maybe the easiest group to point to, where both Doer and Finance had CIOs. Doer's IS group was much larger than, Finance's IS group was much larger than Doer's. We ran the statewide enterprise systems, as Commissioner Hanson talked about, and we've been able to, through attrition, now we only have one CIO for the two agencies. And so we've continued to look at ways to integrate the operations, but in terms of savings, they would be difficult to quantify. Certainly, we've also, as you suggested, there have been costs involved with the merger. I think they all shake out. I think in the end, we have a more productive agency, but even just the small tasks of merging our mailboxes in Outlook has been a significant enterprise.
Madam Chair, so I guess the question is, why did we do that?
Oh, Madam Chair.
Representative Colbert.
Representative Winkler, I don't know if you were here or not, but the idea to merge, you know, was one idea, but then the legislature said you can't reduce any employees other than the commissioner and the commissioner's support. And so we tied their hands as a legislature.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, of course, but they have had overall a net combined 30% reduction in staffing since 2000, which is a pretty substantial reduction for two agencies put together anyway. I guess I don't know what more reduction you could have envisioned by combining them in any way. I mean, I don't know how you could take agency can take a 30% hit and maintain the same level of service. Especially, and then combining them wouldn't really help that. That would only make it, that would seem to be more challenging. But I don't know.
Madam Chair, Winkler, if I could, I think that there are, for the central agencies, and you know this better than most because you see the central agencies in this committee, the backroom operations in all of those agencies have continued to get smaller as we try to maintain the work that we need to do in our agencies. Pulling our agencies together for Doer and Finance actually has helped us in that respect. There were some places where, for example, Doer, because of the need to put out pretty significant mailings with the insurance program, they had a pretty sophisticated web and communication staff. We've been able to access those, and I think you see some of that when you look at the redesigned website, where we had more talent there than we had in our in former Finance. Finance, on the other hand, had some abilities on the information systems and the security side that Doer didn't have. And so, again, we've been able to, I think, get some benefits just from people working together that way. That's more kind of in the efficiency realm. I think on the policy side, there's really been an improvement. Just in having people like labor relations and the budget folks get to sit down regularly to exchange ideas about how things are looking on the financial side. Also having the economic analysis group closer to some of those, the labor relations group also, I think, has been a benefit. So some of those are more esoteric, but I think there's still, from the policy side, probably bigger benefits than you see on the dollar side.
Madam Chair, then I guess the next question on it, because this is startling to me, a 30% reduction in 9 years is, I guess, you know, it's what happens when you chip away year after year, but how far down can we go? Is this the line that we should expect to see going back up or flattening out at some point, or can we just continue to cut, you know, I guess in another 9 years we'd have a 60% reduction? Would we be able to continue to function that way, or do we need to look at a different approach to the state agency, this at least agency?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I think what you see as you chip away at it is, if you recall back to the earlier days of session when we had a couple of meetings and conversations about internal control, as you limit the number, that as you limit the number of people, that's one of the areas that in the past, our agency and under my predecessors, we've taken reductions. So you see across our agency a door, you see some of that. And I also think, just an anecdote, when I was out in Washington a few weeks ago for some stimulus meetings, and I had a chance to interact with some of my counterparts. And in one of the meetings on reporting requirements, my counterpart from another state brought up this very issue that we had, you know, and in her words, we had seen a fairly significant reduction in our department, and I saw a lot of heads nodding, and a few acknowledged that afterwards. So we're not the only state that has, in this decade with crunched state finances, has limited the, and starts with your targets getting lower, state government targets, but they were experiencing some of the same issues and referenced it in this meeting. So I've seen it, you know, and talked with my counterparts in other states as well.
Madam Chair, I guess the question to me is this right-sizing the agency, and this is now where it should have been? Was it bloated in the past? Is there some great gains in productivity that have allowed us to absorb this? Are we going to have to see this rise again in the future? Or, I guess, what's the direction of the agency given the 30% cut in 9 years? What does the future hold?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I think you see, as we go forward in our presentation, you know, what our views are on right-sizing. First, you will see a proposal to add individuals for our internal auditing functions, but we also, with the passage of the federal stimulus and the enormous reporting requirements, are going to need some assistance with that as well. I think, in answer your question, in right-sizing, we've probably gone a little too far, and we need to right-size a little more. I think we still, I'm proud of the level of service we provide, but a little more assistance, which is why we're, one of the pitches we're going to make you, is why we're here.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, if I could just finish on that too. I think that the other thing that we have done over the years, which has somewhat mitigated the cut in appropriations and staffing, but by no means, I think, addressed at all, is we've really been pushing on the IT side to make sure that we're getting whatever we can out of things. You'll hear a little later about platform changes and other things that we've done where we have been able to recoup significant savings. And so that's been, I think, on the plus side. I'd say that what you see in this budget is the recognition that we've probably pushed that as far as we can. And so that there are some places where if we're going to fulfill a statutory mission, we need some more help.
Okay, well, I'll take this. Representative Winkler moves adoption of the minutes of both March 18th and March 19th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes and the minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Winkler.
Okay, we have Representative Holberg, was that what you wanted to say? Okay. Then we have Chip Myers next on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's good to see you again. One of the things that I see, this is over 9 years, and it's probably one of the good ways for things to go, is that over 9 years you have a nice stepping down, and I think many times with technology you do get efficiencies that you can do better, do more with some less FTEs, but there's also been corresponding expenditures in technology that have offset some of that, so you've kind of shifted in some of how you spent there. Mm-hmm. But I think the MMB and the connection Department of Finance and MMB is only something that's happened in the recent years. I think what Representative Holberg said, and certainly some of those things that have been mentioned here, we have to be careful that one is over 9 years and the other one has just happened only recently. And so I would expect, too, that if you wouldn't have had some of these burdens of the all the extra accounting for the stimulus funds, you might have been able to continue that down, but with extra work, there may be a need for extra support when you've already been creating sufficient efficiencies along this way. It may be at this point you can't do much more, but that could be the FTEs. So I think the comparison of 9 years to 1 year is a little bit different.
Okay, Representative Taylor.
Well, Madam Chair, I just wanted to provide a counterpoint to, I think, where Representative Winkler was going, and that is that, I mean, I agree with his concern. I think that our danger is in always thinking that that consolidation or mergers is about cost savings. I think it's really, our question should be twofold. One is, do we have the infrastructure necessary to do the work, and the work is actually the enterprise of serving the public, and are we improving that service? I think that the conversation with the commissioner mentioned, or referenced,
I could,
it was right between the field goals there, but sorry, it was between the goalposts. That clearly the infrastructure had been eroded away on the internal control side too far. And the question I have related to all the other pieces that we're hearing from finance as well as from admin and others is, are we actually are we improving the enterprise which is serving the public? And my sense is that the infrastructure has been eroded to the point where we are not not actually improving that enterprise and doing the work of government. I hate to say of good government, but that's really, you know, this is about the least sexy and least interesting committee from the outside, but it's probably the most important because of all the infrastructure and that pretty much everything flows through here that's going to make things work. I will point out, Madam Chair,
put out an interesting bill this time.
no doubt, Madam Chair, it will be an interesting bill, and I look forward to working with you on it.
I think we hit the record last year. The veto message was the longest veto message I've ever seen.
Longer than four letters, even. I'm sorry, I was going towards something, and I totally lost track of it because of the. I'll hold off there. Oh, I know what I was going to say.
All right.
That just interestingly, you know, for instance, the Pollution Control Agency has been able to continue to add employees almost at will, and we seem to, as a legislature, have had no problem with that.
I
know that's changing
this
year.
But a lot of those are federally funded employees, I think.
I'm not quite sure about that, but okay. That level of infrastructure seems to be bloated in some areas, and in other areas that it just is too easy to undermine. And I think we have to be cautious as an entire legislature. And back to the conversation about that Representative Kiffmeyer asked, sort of, you know, it's easy to articulate a need for technology because of the infrastructure piece, but when you're trading technology for healthcare, which is really what the perception is, we have a lot of work to do. And I'm glad to see that the PCA is going to see their budget altered severely this year. I'll end my soliloquy there.
Okay, we do have a pretty packed agenda, so we better keep going if we can.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Commissioner.
Representative Kalin, I've learned in my years at the Capitol that the state government bill and Representative Kahn, the chair who does it, is my first and most interesting read. I do it out of interesting and enjoyment, but also I read every word. if you look at the next slide, key information technology projects, two things that we're fairly proud of. You won't see on the front page of newspapers, but they're two items that we think have added to our efficiency. The first is the semaphore upgrade. In 2007, we went through a platform change which yielded enough savings that we were able to turn around in this last September, do an upgrade of the system. It has resulted in a 14-year-old system being state-of-the-art. and one of our strongest enterprise systems. And then the second...
Commissioner, is that the first one that I can recall that was done without a scandal associated with it?
Semaphore?
Yes. I mean, it was done perfectly, so we never heard about it. Okay, never mind. As opposed to others. Let's go on.
Have there been others?
No.
Anyway, the second system, I know that we're working with, and is phase one and phase two is our budget information system, and we are using funding, if you remember back, Madam Chair and members, to 2007, we received carry forward authority for technology, and we used that money for this the BIS system. We're hoping to have, or we will have, in phase one, background materials and budget documents for our supplemental budget next year. And it's also, we're also working with agencies and legislative staff. It will be a big step forward for all of us in our development of our budget. And then stay tuned. The launch of our TAP Minnesota is just around the corner. We have been nailing down a few details, but eminently it's our transparency and accountability website. It's online, instant access to state payments for schools, local governments, contractors, and other vendors. It includes over three-quarters of the general fund spending for current and recent years, and establishes the architecture for future additions. We utilize our antiquated map system to do this. It was a fairly significant accomplishment by, I think, the people in the Department of Management and Budget to actually open a portal for people, as you will see when we release it within the next week. I'm very pleased and proud of the work they did, and look forward to showing that to you when we release it. With that, I'm going to turn it over to our Deputy Commissioner, Stephanie Anders.
The slide at the bottom of the fourth page of your handout specifically moves us now to looking at the governor's recommendations for fiscal 10 and 11. Just wanted to start by giving you a little bit of a view into how we approach the budget process. This is the first combined budget for our merged agency, and so we had some, and we had done a lot of this over the year and the months preceding the budget development, but basically had to try to figure out how, in a set of divisions that hadn't really worked together before, how do we do some joint priority setting across those divisions. So we asked each division senior staff member to go back and assess the key activities that that division was responsible for and their priorities. Asked them to take a look at key retirements and then to think about how we continue to move on past those retirements and do the knowledge transfer involved. A couple people on the horizon of retirement that you're well familiar with, Dr. Stinson, also two members of his economic team. Collectively, Stinson's actually the newbie, I think, at about 27 years. The rest of them have more than that. And so the retirement of all three of them makes us a little nervous. We've added one economist to the group. He's learning a lot, but we clearly still need to be working on the plan to replace that team so that they can continue to give you and us the information that sets the baseline for decision-making here. We also are on the horizon in the 3 to 5 year time frame, perhaps sooner, of the retirement of our state labor negotiator, and also other key staff members around the department. And so again, we're starting to think about how do we get those groups ready for the retirement of those people, who do we need to bring on, and what do we need to do to be ready for those so that again we can continue to provide the service we're used to. We also tried to look at some, ask the divisions to look at places where, using some carry forward that we've squirreled away in this current biennium, how might they make some investments that would help them to get to a lower operating base for 10 and 11. One of my favorite examples is something that the Treasury Division under Assistant Commissioner Cardell came up with, was basically a reader sorter machine, this really huge machine that basically takes the warrants that come in from banks. When it was purchased about 10 years ago, it was $250,000 then, so I can only imagine what it costs now. But basically, all of those warrants came back in paper form to us. They went through the reader sorter, and as Commissioner Cardell and her group were looking at it, they realized that if they worked with their consultant, they might be able to develop an application that could handle those warrants electronically. It ends up being about a $35,000 investment in the current year, but it'll save about $25,000 in operating costs every year, so we'll make up that cost even in the next biennium. It's those kind of things, again, that we were trying to really encourage everybody to look at and consider. We also asked each member to think about what activities they might eliminate. We feel through the years that, and we've had some of this discussion already, that a lot of the activities the agency's been doing, it's things like training, it's things like support, it's things like oversight that are easy to chip away a little bit at, and all of a sudden, before you realize it, you're really not able to do it to the standard that we're looking for. And so we ask people to say, are there things we can completely quit doing so that we can shift resources to the things that are more important? And I'd say that exercise didn't yield a whole lot. We feel like over the time period, being pressed as we have been on the general fund side, most activities we could have gotten rid of, we've already done. And so most of the things that we're moving forward with still need to be there from either a statutory or a mission perspective. We also, I think to the point Representative Kalin was making about looking at how it was serving the citizens, with the new mission for this agency, as we worked with our employees over the summer to look at a mission statement for who were in finance, which for many people seemed like very different missions and very different activities, working with employees and working with financial management data and IT systems. What we kept coming back to in those discussions was a real emphasis on the fact that the work that our agency did was key to supporting what the rest of state government could get done, and that if we didn't do our job well, other agencies can't get their payments out, can't deliver services, can't help citizens in any positive way. And so we tried to really, in our mission statement, make sure that we're talking about that what we do furthers other work. It isn't an end in itself. It is important to getting state government's work done, and as we talk about it specifically in the mission statement, increasing state government's capacity to manage and utilize financial, human information, and analytical resources. So again, we had a lot of conversation about how does this specific activity support that mission. Coming out of that process, the governor's recommendations for fiscal 10 and 11 had three key recommendations. We've since added the federal stimulus response. I'm going to talk first about the 5% operating reduction, because we haven't talked too much about that in this committee. We'll talk about MAPS at the end then. I think you've heard a lot about it, but we wouldn't want to miss the opportunity to bring it to you again. So the 5% operating reduction, basically, we took 8 positions and eliminated them. They were vacant positions, so they weren't layoffs involved here. I would say, just as a side note, an interesting thing that we have regularly, we have good people at finance. We also, as you know, state government sometimes has some challenges on salary levels compared to other governments. We had a regular outflow of staff for quite a while for local governments and other entities. One of the few bright spots of the economy is that we really have seen a drop-off in people leaving. And so the vacancies that we've been able to count on to fund some of our shortfalls haven't really been happening anymore. These 8 positions, I think we've only had 1 or 2 departures since then at that point. The positions that we eliminated were across the departments, again, trying to make sure that we were not getting at some of the core activities. We eliminated the positions in accounting support, human resources management, administrative services, and IT support. Again, all important positions, but things that we felt like, given the fact that they were vacant, we didn't replace those staff at this time. We also used, in fiscal 2009, $650,000, again, to prepare for some the lower operating base that we knew that we would have in 10 and 11. The largest of that is some $400,000 that we spent or in the process of spending to reconfigure the space that we have in the Centennial Office Building. As you may have known, if you've been over to visit former Dewar or former Finance, Dewar was on the second floor, occupied the whole floor. Finance had about 80% of the fourth floor. Matt is over in the administration building. We're bringing all those people together in significantly condensed space, so that we now have about a floor and a half, and we'll end up saving pretty significant operating costs going forward. And so with that investment of money, we're able to lower our operating base. Those are probably the key things that I...
So, excuse me, is that... So there is now a half a floor, essentially, of a new space, and so that might be available to move something in the experimental space.
Madam Chair, we have been... Administration's been working closely with the tenants in the building, and I believe that OET is taking up most of that space now.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, just a... question that 3 of us can't answer, 4 of us can't answer over here. What's MAD?
I'm sorry. Madam Representative Kalin, it's Management Analysis and Development. That was the group, the in-state consulting group that moved from administration to our department by reorg order in August.
Just so you don't feel bad about it, I had to ask everyone around me to
Madam Chair, I think you'll be seeing the bill actually to formalize that transfer coming to this committee, so we'll get to see it again.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Just looking at the two slides here on page 5, so basically you're eliminating 8 positions and you're creating 8 new ones. Why wouldn't you just call that a zero, not change?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I was looking at the commissioner because I think that's a budget process question. Agencies were asked to come up with reductions. I think, again, in a useful exercise to look at how to reprioritize, you feel free to not cut us at all and add, and we would certainly put those positions in place. I think what we wanted to be sure we're indicating in the governor's budget is the priority we're placing on that financial oversight thing. So the fact that if we were to do that without bringing it forward, we wouldn't get the chance to highlight for you what we plan on doing.
I guess I have a question about the federal stimulus and response. I had one company come in to me and explain how they had this whole process. They were, that was going to be completely, make the stimulus funds, totally track all the stimulus funds, make it completely transparent. They were donating it to the state free. I thought this was an arranged deal, and then I heard there have been like 4 or 5 companies that have come to you and done that. And what's happening? I'm very interested in what kind of technology we're going to be using in this. How we're going to get it done, and what I'm particularly interested in is how that will then be applicable to the next big set of tracking I think we're really interested in, which is how this environment legacy funding is going to be spent. I know that's not our responsibility, but we think the tracking of it we might have some interest in.
Madam Chair, we have a couple of slides in our state budget director to talk about the added challenge of the stimulus. I think we will get at your questions if we're allowed to speak.
Okay, just go on in the way you want to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, state budget director, and thank you, Madam Chair, for the excellent transition to the next slide. The top of it says added challenge fiscal stimulus. As the committee has discussed so far, that there is are a lot of challenges within the department in order to keep the basic line of activities going. The stimulus bill adds a significant addition on top of that. The federal government's expectation for an unprecedented level of transparency and accountability was hammered home when the commissioner and I met with other states and heard from the Office of Management and Budget and federal agencies as well as administration officials saying that this was separate, that we had a high bar for federal funds already, that the stimulus funds would set a new pattern and a new height in terms of accountability and reporting.
When you were all there in Washington hanging out with the people, did you ever ask why you couldn't use the federal scheme of taking a percentage of the stimulus money to check it out? That's what they do whenever they give NIH funds or NSF funds. They're used to that, so why didn't they do it for this one?
Madam Chair, we certainly did. We raised it in the morning, in the early afternoon, as well as the early evening, and pointed out quite consistently that there was some inconsistencies here, that it was great that federal agencies had operating funds to deliver their portion of the program, but really that only got the check to the door. And once the states or other units of government were to receive those funds and do the reporting, actually deliver the program, there wasn't that same level of administrative support. I think their assumption was, gosh, they're giving us so much money that we would just pick it up. But nonetheless, I think the discussion was very helpful for them to understand that states have been taking back office operations and shrinking those, that there isn't a kind of capacity that can swallow this level of activity quickly, and that something needs to be done one way or another. We asked for flexibility, we asked for it repeatedly, didn't get any assurances, in fact, that's forthcoming, so certainly that's on the table.
Is it? Oh, okay. When will we know whether it's passed on the table?
If I knew that, I would not have. I don't know. I'm not sure that they will ever respond one way or another. I can't assure you that.
Okay. That's been a big one.
Thank you. This may be for the commissioner. Do you or do you not have a 5% reduction?
Madam Chair, Representative Bingham, yes.
Okay, because as I understand, Madam Chair, as I understand it, you proposed $2 million and some change, and then you put 1.6 back in. Then you have the oversight. So all I see in the reductions is a $654,000 for the space consolidation.
Madam Chair, Representative Bingham, we have identified the 5%, but then we have added the initiatives that we're talking about. You know, we don't factor in the $17 million and the internal controls and the others.
Madam Chair,
I can.
So you're adding them back in. So I don't understand how that equals a 5%, I think, cut.
The issue is that new functions are being added back in.
I get that loud and clear. I'm just wondering then where is the 5% reduction? Because you're reducing and then you're adding back, so then it almost appears as if you're only net losing $654,000.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think your point is right on. The 5% reduction is basically within the base operations. The Deputy Commissioner walked through some of the changes that were envisioned within current functions. It is then the legislature's choice as to other changes that could be possible. If you're looking at the net impact on the department, I don't have that figure here, but I'm sure we could get that for you. If you accepted both the reductions and the increases, the net result would be something other than 5%.
Madam Chair, I mean, I guess I just, I get your presentation here, but I don't want to go as far to say it's disingenuous. But I believe it's disingenuous to come in and think that it's a 5% reduction when you're backfilling it, in my opinion, with some other things to not having that 5% reduction. We can follow up at a later date, but I don't know. It's just more of a comment, but we can talk about it at a later date so that we can proceed with the budget. But I think it's something that it's just observation, I guess.
Chair, Representative Bingham, I can assure you nothing we do is disingenuous. What we did here is a two-pronged approach. 5% reduction. If you choose to fund our other initiatives, that would be wonderful. If not, this is our 5% reduction. Under the governor's budget, we were given a target of a 5% operating reduction. We will meet all of our responsibilities, whether you fund MAPS or fund our additional auditors or everything. It's not disingenuous. It's meant to show you this is what we can live with, and this is what we'll do if we reduce. And if you add some of these other items, that's the additional priorities.
One last thing. So could you do, with the 5% reduction, could you, and I use quotes around that, could you then continue to do the internal auditor things and stuff like that, the additional things you want to do with that 5% reduction?
Madam Chair, Representative Bingham, are you saying that you're just saying we're swapping out the 8 vacant positions on the slide versus the 8 we're adding for auditors? I think as we talked about, I think they, in essence, yes. I mean, as they balance, if you choose to do that.
So you wouldn't need the additional funds to then do the additional auditing?
Only if you don't do the reduction, I think.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, so, this is a discussion for, I mean, in, I don't know. I just guess it's an option A, option B, but it just doesn't, it just was very, again, I have to say, it's just kind of an observation that I'll leave it at that, Madam.
Okay.
I think I've said what I have to say.
I think we understand it. Let's go on.
Madam Chair, continuing on the stimulus funding request, essentially this July we're going to already be required by the federal government to report up financial information, progress on jobs created, and other yet-to-be-defined information to the recovery.gov. We are not sure exactly what information or how it's going to get there, but we do know they want it by July. That's the nature of this request. So we're asking for some funding up front so that we can have some wherewithal once we know what, in fact, we need to do. to buy the technology, to take whatever free technology people feel like giving us, or all the consulting that will come with that, I'm sure, so that we can get something up and ready. If we can do it within state resources, we will certainly do that.
Okay.
But we just know that we have a very tight timeline, and it's been difficult.
It just seems to me that if any issues needed federal cooperation among all the various intergovernmental agencies, this is one where you should all stand together and speak with a loud and clear voice. It also seems that to a certain extent on the federal level, taking care of some of the technological problems of how you deal with this at some level ought to be a useful thing. If only admitting that they don't have anything and then picking out the best state one that they see and then making that available to other states. I hope that you and your counterparts
are
continuing to raise that issue about how much clearer it would be to get. I mean, there must be states that legislatures are no longer meeting now. There are some with limited ones, and that sort of, and they're still going to have to deal with this. So,
Madam Chair, when we were there, there was a, I don't remember which state, but we were there on a Thursday, and they were finishing their session on a Saturday. And they were trying to figure out some of these issues.
Yeah.
So we at least have till May. But we are coordinating with the national governors, all of our, from the Governors Association to the budget officers to the auditors, all of our national organizations have been very good about coordinating our efforts.
And I hope you're involving the legislative ones too in that.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks. Representative Taylor?
To this point, Madam Chair and Mr. and Mrs. Scholl out there, this question of kind of where this tracking infrastructure is going to be or belongs within our budgets and within agencies is quite timely, because tomorrow we'll be rolling out of Energy Finance, House File 680, the energy stimulus portion, and gone from language that would allow the department to contract for their own tracking. Interestingly, I'll just note the $132 million largest block, the weatherization block, the community action agencies have told us that every single line item in our reporting, transparency reporting, or accountability reporting piece, they said they could deliver, they already track now, which is great. And so I hope that more and more of that, as we go down existing pipelines, that we maximize that. But we've embraced for now the $5 million kind of open education training info data line item that the governor's office at OES has asked for. My question is, is that actually going to happen through Finance MMB or through each agency and all these pieces? Are we creating duplication? And I'm a little concerned about it, and I think my bill is going to go to conference, but to this general point, should we be directing it to Finance and MMB to do a larger tracking?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think on the larger point, I tend having trouble speaking on the specifics that I'm not so fully aware. I think there is really two levels of reporting that are going on. There are agencies that are going to have ongoing relationships with their subcontractors, the grantees, nonprofits, that are going to have, in some instances, sufficient reporting systems going through. In some instances, they're going to have to adjust it. What we don't know is how we are to aggregate these distinct databases into one massive database, or whether we can just simply point to them on a website, or whether we have to aggregate this plus maybe some non-state information all in one place and then send that over to the federal government. So I think there's really two IT challenges going on simultaneously. And so to your question, I think there's really two separate issues. One of how is in the energy bill, how do you address the reporting and technology questions there, and then a separate one of the coordination across state government and even beyond state government for the state of Minnesota. I think those are two separate issues. And are we coordinating? Yes. But I can't tell you that if we figure out a website or a reporting function to be filled up with information, that necessarily means that the agencies have the wherewithal to get it there.
And Madam Chair, just my concern there is that I believe that on the OES funds, the Office of Energy Security funds that come from DOE, Department of Energy, that the OEF staff expectation seems to be that they're the ones who are going to be reporting to DOE and inputting data onto, transferring data onto recovery.gov. I hope that we are not funding $1.5 million, $1.6 million for work that's going to happen in the agencies. I don't want to undermine the infrastructure in the and that investment, but at the same time, I mean, if we're going to do $1 million or so to do all the data tracking, including the complex energy tracking, which is really critical for long-term progress, and they're going to report to DOE, why do we need to? And my sense is that health, human services, education, higher ed, all of these will have their own reporting requirements, or are we missing something?
Madam Chair, Representative Kaelin, I think what we don't know, what we're missing is definitive information as to what the federal government's process is for collecting this information. I hope that the process is for state agencies to feed information to the federal government in their standard procedures, and that that, in fact, is how recovery.gov will be populated. We asked that. That was another theme of the meeting, and there was very decidedly no direction as to whether that was going to be the approach or whether states were going to be responsible for aggregating that information and providing that centrally. And that information wouldn't be just financial information like we house in maps. It would be other types of data as well. So I think what we're missing is really a firm understanding of what the expectations are. We're trying to hold tight, but we want the legislature to understand that we may need some flexibility to respond. This whole initiative is not IT. A significant chunk of it is, but it's also to look at the reporting, the controls, the coordination necessary to make sure that Minnesota is able to comply with the controls, the reporting, and grant applications that we need to do.
Okay. And is OET involved in all of this?
Madam Chair, we will be talking with OET and other agencies trying to figure out the architecture as soon as we've got a little bit more information of what the architecture requirements are going to be.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I know we have to move on, but I do want to ask one last question. It appears that on the energy side specifically, and I'm just doing because I've lived and breathed that for the last 2 months, but there's a 10% early report, and then that we'll get essentially when the governor signs the bill that we'll get the 10% of our funds cleared, and then after showing some strong performance, we'll get the next 40%. Or actually, started getting the plan approved, then we'll get the next 40%, and then showing strong performance, we'll get cleared our last 50%. It is our understanding that we may, and I think this is goes along with these other reporting questions, we may be in a position to get a second bite at the apple or get additional orchards to graze in if we can show. I think we're going to have to answer this question before we pass our bill out of this committee related to this expenditure item, whether this is going to allow us to show the performance across different agencies that are showing results that could then result in taking second dips at where other states, we know other states are not going to be able to deliver energy with the kind of results that we will. And so it's a very exciting arena, but at the same time, I'm hopeful that we can continue to keep this in mind as we talk about this very proposed line item.
Okay. Let's Representative Pope.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just real quickly, of the approximately $800 million, I'm forgetting the name of that fund, but the 81% goes to education and 19% is flex. Can those dollars be used for these types of costs?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. So the stabilization fund is two major pots. The biggest one by far is the education pot, which is for higher education in K-12. A smaller pot worth a little bit over $100 million is for general purpose. That could certainly be directed to this purpose. It is, from the governor's budget perspective, you know, he would be replacing some other savings or some other spending with this money. So it's still the bottom line.
And, Madam Chair, do you know with your targets that are going to be presented in Ways and Means on Friday, are you going to segment the federal funds and which spending areas they'll be dedicated to? In other words, is there some opportunity for state government finance to get some of those stabilization funds to address this kind of federal stimulus need?
Let's check it out.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, to continue on then with the presentation. The stimulus, we're looking for support on the financial monitoring controls, organizing planning, both within state government and in non-state entities, making sure that we got our reporting controls all in line, as Representative Galen suggested, to make sure that we continue to get and draw down as much of the federal stimulus funding as we could be available. The second item is related to that same point. It's again dealing with uncertainty. Federal matching funds generally haven't been part of the stimulus requirements, and to the extent that federal programs require match, oftentimes there's a waiver option so that states can actually ask for a waiver from those matching requirements. Competitive grants, that may not be the same story, and competitive grants are what we don't know much about right now. And so we're asking for $5 million to be put into the contingency fund in addition to the regular appropriation of the contingency fund, basically to provide the legislature and the executive branch some opportunity to respond to match requirements if and when they come up. It's not an appropriation MMB, it's basically to say, if there's a match requirement, then let the executive branch come together or figure out what that matching requirement is, come to the LAC so that there's some discussion as to whether it's appropriate, whether that strategy is correct or not. Without this kind of funding, we could potentially lose opportunities on stimulus funds, or else have to call a special session in order to address a relatively minor issue.
Okay.
Madam Chair, then that concludes the contingency funds discussion. I just want to point out that there has been an awful lot of activity. We've been able to do, I think, an awful lot on the fly. Right now on the web is our sort of 179-page document that shows a lot of the stimulus funds that are available to the state. Probably in another day, you'll be receiving a whole bunch of federal funds requests as well. A lot of activity around this. I just appreciate your support and looking at managing those. With that, I think I will turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Cardell.
And
first Assistant Commissioner.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Lori Mull, Assistant Commissioner. We are now on slide 14, which is on the bottom of page 7 of your handout. And this is the Financial Oversight and Assistance Initiative. And this is in response to trends we are seeing in state agencies. We've talked about this here with you earlier when we were before you, along with Auditor Nobles. And that we are seeing a need for increased agency support to develop and maintain their internal controls. This is due, in part at least, due to changing circumstances, which include the turnover of experienced employees and also more complex and rapidly changing technical environment. The change item would add 8 staff, 2 in the Treasury area, which Assistant Commissioner Cardell will speak about in a few minutes, and 6 for the internal control support unit. The goal of this unit will be more front-end education and training. We do not intend to replicate the work currently being done by the legislative auditor, and so this will be front-end prevention and training activities rather than back-end auditing. The initiative will provide increased capacity for training, agency support and oversight, and also provide resources for individual agency consultation and advice. With this initiative, we'll have increased ability to do follow-up on findings by the legislative auditor. We'll provide a more active role by attending exit conferences and gaining a more complete understanding of the agency issues as well as the agency plans for resolution of those findings. We'll review those plans with the agencies involved and then provide ongoing consultation and follow-up until the issues have been resolved. We'll also work with the OLA through regular meetings to identify trends and concerns earlier in the process, to identify statewide risks, and to evaluate areas for additional training with agencies, as well as areas where policies and procedures may need to be updated. The initiative includes three training positions, which will allow us to expand our training for the areas identified for IDOLA that I just discussed. Also, increased training on internal controls and risk assessment, which we've talked about earlier. And annual statewide training for finance personnel on the code of conduct policy, which is being implemented by our agency this year. We will also provide additional tools for agencies, tools such as risk assessment questionnaires, exception reporting to monitor controls, and also provide a forum for sharing best practices and resources across agencies. For example, we would provide increased support of agency internal audit offices through a more active internal audit advisory roundtable. This is a group that has been meeting representing the internal audit offices across state agencies. They have many excellent resources, including skilled staff and with broad experience, and also good tools that can provide best practice advice for agencies, even if they don't have an internal audit office.
Okay, we need to.
Just a quick question. I know we need to get going, but on this, on page 7, that bottom slide here, I just want to make sure on that first point, training and support for agencies, do these include, and you mentioned some of them, are these new functions, or are they existing functions in this new unit? I'm specifically talking about the training and support, the front-end activity that you described.
Madam Chair, Representative, we currently do provide some capacity for training to agencies, but this will significantly expand that capacity and provide more updates on existing policies and procedures, making sure that strong internal controls are embedded within all of those procedures and have updates. Training for agencies on a more regular basis. We currently have over 2,000 accounting users across state agencies and have limited capacity currently to reach those on a regular basis.
Just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair. What would you say, if you know, what is the current capacity to do that in terms of FTEs? I see you have 6 here in this new ICSU, but just in terms of that first point, the training and support for agencies on the front end, can you estimate, and maybe you don't know, that's okay, but do you know how many FTEs are now on that path?
Madam Chair, Representative, we don't have a dedicated internal control support unit currently, and so we have some training resources in our statewide payroll unit. We have some training resources for the operation of our MAPS accounting system. And we have some part-time resources in our financial reporting area that provides internal control consultation. But we don't have the dedicated resources like we envisioned with this this initiative. Madam Chair, members, the only point I'll add before turning this over to Assistant Commissioner Cardell is that another resources for agencies, for small agencies, with a need for enhanced internal control support is included in the governor's budget in an initiative for the Department of Administration to expand their small agency or support or SMART program.
For the record, my name is Kathy Cardell, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Treasury and Debt Management at Management and Budget. And on the slide that's number 15, we're going to talk a little bit very quickly, I know, about the governor's initiative to provide additional capacity with respect to oversight of bonding. Just a little bit of an overview of the primary goals of this initiative are to provide enhanced and ongoing interaction and guidance to state agencies and also the local grantees who receive bonding appropriations, as well as to our own MMB staff who are also working with those agencies to implement those bond appropriations. And then the secondary and equally important goal is to
continue to protect the tax-exempt status of the state's general obligation bonds. A little quick background, the staffing in this area has not changed in several decades. We have two people in debt management. Neither one of us are 100% dedicated to debt management, and we manage a debt portfolio that's currently in excess of $5 billion. As many of you know, you know that the capital projects are becoming more numerous and more complex. I did a little exercise just for my own amusement on the 2008 bonding bill, the first one, the large one that was adopted, not the second one. There was a total of 191 separate appropriations for individual capital projects and programmatic capital projects, which had multiple, you know, individual projects within them. And that's just one bonding bill. There are many more financing options, and there's much, much more market uncertainty than there has been. And it's interesting to listen to Representative Hanlon talk about the energy side of it, because some of the federal stimulus bonding provisions, which we should be seriously looking at, are a very different types of instruments and will require a different approach than what the state utilizes when we sell tax-exempt general obligation bonds today, if we utilize them. The proposal is to add two people. The first is a response primarily to the legislative auditor's finding for more oversight on the back end of projects. Most of our input and guidance is all up front. We do training in advance. We provide sample documents. You know, we meet with agencies on projects, but the auditor felt very strongly that there needed to be some back-end auditing. We don't have any capacity to do that currently, and in fact, Mr. Novovo himself will tell you that it was a much larger undertaking than what they ever thought it would be to audit what they did audit in the report that was released back in December. The second proposed position is really for day-to-day management of projects and financing programs. The person that works with me currently, who some of you may know, Susan Garola, is terrific, but Susan is someone who will be nearing her ability to retire in the not-too-distant future, and we have no one with any capacity to backfill that knowledge and skill set. So we're looking to add someone at a, you know, more junior level to learn the debt management side of, the, of this business and help us take some of the load off when she leaves. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I imagine all these bright students who went into the Carlson School instead of engineering and medicine and so forth are going to be looking for jobs.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to take one of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair. Ms. Cordell, does the possibility of an appropriation bond add to the complexity of what you're doing, or require additional staff that may not? Obviously, you may not have experience in that type of instrument before. Does anybody else out there in the world know how to do that?
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, the state appropriation bond would be a new financing project, just like a new revenue bond program or a new financing for technology that we've talked about here at this committee. And so all of that, of course, adds a burden. It's not a particularly complex transaction, to be perfectly honest. It's based off of the state's credit, but it is time-consuming because it could be large. And, you know, so it's...
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if we could reduce this by one if we decided for some reason not to do that appropriation bond part of the...
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, you know, there are many things that we should be doing on the debt management side from an investor relations perspective, from a marketing perspective, that we simply don't do because we just need to kind of deal with bond issue by bond issue and project by project.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I know we've been through maps, talked about it a couple of times. Maybe you can do this pretty quickly. But.
Madam Chair, I will do it very quickly. It is a $17.95 million appropriation request for the fiscal 10 and 11 year. It is a joint project with the Department of Finance, Department of Administration, and the Office of Enterprise Technology. There are added risks with our antiquated system, the mainframe risks, desktop risks, staffing risks, I know it is. I'm asking it respectfully for you to fund it. I know it is an incredibly difficult year to do something like this, but hope that you look favorably upon it. I think that it's only going to get more expensive, and we're already approaching our risk mitigation costs are approaching what half the biennial cost of this replacement initiative at $8.5 million. So with that, I'll conclude my presentation. We can answer any more questions, or we'll be on our way.
And so we'll be seeing you again.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
We're going to rearrange our schedule a little bit. Since we have a bill author here, we're going to go to the Gambling Control Board, but I think since you have a big amendment to your bill, Representative Actions, I think you can do it pretty quickly, can't we? So, an amendment that takes off the part that people objected to. So let's go to House File 1511, and then we'll go to the Gambling Control Board, and my guess is that we won't get to either campaign finance or the State Board of Investment. And we spent some time on one of them at least before. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you'd be kind enough to move my bill, I'd appreciate it. And then there's an amendment that'll put it in a non-controversial form.
Okay, I'll move House File 1511, and does this just go back to finance? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's the A6 amendment that would put it into the shape that I guess I would like to proceed with, and which will make it less controversial. And if you would be
okay.
So kind as to offer that and put it in the shape that I'd like to
Okay.
move,
I'll
it, that
move the A6 amendment, which puts the bill in the shape that the author wants it, and that takes out everything about electronic bingo, potentially. But you left sports bookmaking.
You know, I was wondering how long it would be till that came up. But
okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Atkins, can you explain what the finance parts of the rest of the bill
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair. There is a single finance piece.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We probably need to act on the amendment.
We need to vote on that amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes.
I thought we were pulling a fast one on the opponents because of the electronic. But anyway, the single piece that...
We're good, but not that good.
Is there's an incentive fee for the charities to register in time, and if they don't, there's a $50 charge. Currently, there's no incentive at all to get paperwork in on time,
okay.
And so as a result, the Gambling Control Board encounters that with some regularity, and there's not any teeth to prevent that from happening. This is a very modest amount of money, but it should be enough to hopefully motivate folks to get their paperwork on time. That is.
Can you give us a page number? Not that I don't want to read the whole bill, but where is the section that we're supposed to be paying attention to?
Yeah, I've got it memorized, and it's page 20. maybe even line 5 or something like that. And, Madam Chair, that, quite frankly, is the only component that. As far as the fee or any sort of finance components, but we wanted to make sure that your committee had an opportunity to take a look at it and was comfortable with it.
Okay. Ms. Kibarek, did you want to make any comments on this? No. At least to say it's okay. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Members. Madam Chair, Tom Barrett, Director of the Gambling Control Board. Hope I gave the right page number. Maybe not.
20.
Page 20, yeah. Line 5?
Yep.
And all we're calling it the incentive fee, but law requires currently that organizations have to submit their paperwork for excluded exempt permit 30 days in advance, and we've had organizations that, for whatever reason, haven't met that. We haven't denied it, but we're looking to encourage them to do it more timely.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
Yes,
from
are these Holbrook? Organizations like the ones that are doing raffles for community things? I mean, should they know about the 30-day rule before they even inquire? And I don't have a problem with this if this is the savvy gambling people, but if this is the PTO moms that are deciding they want to raffle, you know, something at the PTO dinner or whatever, and they don't know that there's only 30 days, let alone permit half the time.
It's, Madam Chair and Representative, the, it's not the PTA moms, it's the Ducks Unlimited, the pheasants that have done it routinely. Our plan is, if it's passed, is to send a notice to all these orgs that routinely get permits, just give them a heads up, get it to us in time, or send another $50.
And, Madam Chair, if you're like a newbie and you can't make the deadline because you weren't even aware, do you have the ability to waive that doubling of the fee, or...
Madam Chair, Representative, the board would have some latitude. I think what we find, the new organizations coming in, they've been very responsive. They understand the local, you know, the government review and all that. So, but it does bring the point that when a local, you know, the government drags their feet, it was those instances we would allow the waiver of the added fee. If for that reason they didn't get it to us. But we're hopeful this is going to get the attention we need. And we're going to see a reduction.
Okay.
Quick question, Madam Chair. Representative Atkins, I did a pulled up the bill and did a search for the term bracket madness, and I didn't find it. I want to make sure you're not pulling the fast one, that you are indeed instituting the bracket tax, and we're going to balance the budget with that this year.
Madam Chair, Representative Galen, just on you.
Okay, good.
And we should, not respond to that question, but one thing I should point out, the electronic bingo portion of this bill, which we rolled into the Gambling Control Board's bill, will actually be acted on separately in the Commerce and Labor Committee on Thursday afternoon for some folks that are nice enough to be sitting here that I think they're concerned about that element of it. It'll be on Thursday.
Okay. So does everyone understand what we did with this bill, and we now can send it on to finance? Okay? All those, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This actually isn't a finance question, so I hope you'll indulge me. It's just more of a curiosity. On page 5, under the lawful purposes section, number 12, on line 5.16, we're adding an expenditure for citizen monitoring of surface water quality. I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about why, in particular, if you can give an example of why that was added or why you want to add that.
Ms. Barrett certainly can. Madam Chair and Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Pepin. Yes, this has been a couple of years in development. We have a lot of lake association groups trying to work with DNR. There is provisions for DNR-approved projects for primarily trail maintenance and those things. But water quality testing was never one of those specifically identified. When we got into it, did some research, I was amazed, and you all know this, but how much water quality issues cuts across pollution control, Department of Health, Department of Ag. And so working with those entities, we crafted hopefully acceptable language that if there's a lake association primarily that's interested in maintaining water quality. Water quality is going on right now, but this would allow the use of gambling proceeds to pay for the analysis, the testing, and in turn, they take the report from the analysis and give it to pollution control. And it might save some state funds.
Just one follow-up on that section. It says by individuals or NGOs, and I'm wondering why individuals? That seems a little odd to me, as opposed to Mr. Barrett. The NGO makes sense, but I don't understand why it would be. I mean, it kind of seems like I could just get some money to go test some water. So I was just
Madam Chair and Representatives, yes, that is was a concern of ours. The key provision in this case from pollution control was the fact that the report, and they have evidently a list of certified testing labs. So an individual from a lake association could initiate the request to have lake tested, petition their group to pay for it, but it would still come under the lab test, and the report would be generated to pollution control. Now, if by the word individual means so a landowner could go out and do his own testing, it was the belief of pollution control. The individuals meant that there's evidently sort of there's people that are with labs as individuals that would do the testing. So I think I see where you're going.
Yeah, just to me it reads an expenditure by individuals. I think so to go to an individual.
I think there's enough language in here to make it go through the pollution control agency that you can't just decide you're going to test the lake next to and pick up this money from them.
isn't. I would hope there is anyway. But
and it's a concern the board has, Madam Chair. It's new, and as we've found with other cases where we allow some latitude to use of the gambling proceeds, but if we find a problem or we have an individual produce a report that wouldn't be accepted by PCA, the expenditure wouldn't be approved.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. The motion then reoccurs that House File 1511 be passed and recommended to the full committee on finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. You're on your way.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. And Mr. Barrett, while you're there, we'll talk about your agency's budget.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Tom Barrett, Director of the Gambling Control Board. The industry that we regulate is number one in the country when it comes to charitable gaming receipts. Last fiscal year, there's over $1 billion that was wagered. It might be easier to tell you what we don't regulate. We don't have any oversight over the tribal gaming, the lottery, the horse track, or the card rooms. It's strictly the charitable organizations such as the American Legion, the Animal Folk, the fraternal organizations, Fire Relief. By way of numbers, we license roughly 1,400 organizations, and they're conducting gambling at approximately 3,000 sites around Minnesota. In addition, we issue exempt permits, what we would consider relatively small raffle permits, to nearly 4,000 charitable organizations. Last fiscal year, that exempt permit activity generated over $30 million in gross sales.
And those are the ones that are, those organizations are not subject to this $50,
$100? No, that is the example they would be, yes. So we're issuing roughly 4,000 of those permits for that purpose. The other fully licensed orgs are the ones you see at the bar locations where they have a full tab booth and the like. But as I said, Minnesota is number one in the country when it comes to lawful gambling activity. We're one of the smallest when it comes to the regulation. For every dollar spent on charitable gaming, less than 0.3% goes towards the regulatory efforts. But we have a good thing. I don't want to make the picture that Minnesota isn't properly regulated, but we have a board comprised of 7 citizens, 5 are appointed by the governor, 1 by the attorney general, 1 by public safety. We also work very closely with our counterparts at public safety as it relates to criminal investigation and the Department of Revenue as it relates to the tax collection. In addition to the licensing and auditing of charitable organizations, the board also provides mentoring and training programs for each of the licensed gambling manager, and we do site inspections. Last year we conducted site inspections with over 2,000 of those 3,000 sites. It's a $1.1 billion industry, and it's pretty much all cash. And with that kind of an industry, there's a lot of opportunity for problems to occur. But very happy to report, for given the size of the industry and the number of organizations, the problems have been very few. It's a very we work very close with representatives from the industry. If we have problems, there's a formal procedure where they come before the board, the compliance review group, and we deal with some of the situations, everything from a minor fine penalty to suspension. So I just want to give a brief overview. Our budget, we're completely funded from the industry that we regulate through fees. There's upfront licensing fees for gambling managers, organizations, and each site. And then in addition, we charge a 0.1% of gross receipts on all gambling activity.
Okay. I guess one of the questions is that the lawful purposes includes both the charities and also the charitable works, and also includes the things that go to the for the agencies themselves, their utility bills and all of that kind of stuff. How are we doing on the proportion of the money that's raised that goes to what I would say would be 501c3 type deductions?
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. That kind of a split, right now the state of Minnesota is the biggest benefactor when it comes to use of the gambling proceeds. Approximately 50% of all lawful purposes are being paid to the state in the way of the gambling tax. When it comes to the charitable, truly, the 501c3s, as you point out, 42% or last year that accounted for $39 million went for charitable purposes. There's an additional $7 million that was spent by primarily veterans organizations to use to offset their utility expenses and the like for their posts. But to your question, $39 million last year, or approximately 42% of the total lawful purpose, which is pretty good, I think, on a percentage.
Okay. Any other questions from members of the committee? Okay. All members of the committee have this publication in their folder. You didn't get it? Okay. We'll get there. Okay. Anyone who didn't, we'll get a copy of it to you. Okay. No other questions? Then meeting is adjourned.
Okay.